You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire.
Spy versus spy in America, Canada, and Australia, with special guest stars from the Russian and Chinese services. The U.S. Treasury Department issues more sanctions against North Korea's Reconnaissance General Bureau, better known as the Lazarus Group or Hidden Cobra. Russian election influence goes local and domestic. Password manager security problems. And why does your flashlight want to know so much about you? From the CyberWire studios at Datatribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Monday, September 16th, 2019. The news that's broken over the weekend and into today heavily involves espionage, and so our discussions will have a great deal of spy versus spy. First, Yahoo reports that Russian intelligence services successfully compromised FBI and possibly other intelligence community communications from 2010 until 2016. U.S. counterintelligence authorities became aware of the compromise, which involved, among other things, the ability to break encrypted cell phone communications among FBI counterintelligence teams sometime in 2012. Internal disputes within the Obama administration's national security apparatus, which experts who witnessed deliberations characterized to Yahoo as reset hangover, delayed a comprehensive response until December 2016, after the last U.S. presidential election. That response took the form of the expulsion of more than 30 Russian diplomats declared persona non grata for their involvement in the espionage campaign. It also involved U.S. seizure of two comfortable vacation homes, both with nice proximity to the ocean, used by the Russian delegation, one on Long Island, New York, and the other on Maryland's Eastern Shore. The FBI began to move to alternative communication systems after suspecting something was up in 2012. Observers describe that move as expensive. One of the questions the Russian operation aroused is the possibility that the espionage campaign wasn't simply a technical achievement, although it seems clearly to have been that, but rather a technical achievement enabled by an internal turncoat, a mole. There's also a mole hunt underway in Canada. On Friday, a senior member of the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, the RCMP, colloquially the Mounties, Cameron Ortis, has been charged under Canada's Information Security Act, CBC reports. Mr. Ortis had been serving as Director General of the RCMP's National Intelligence Coordination Center. He's alleged to have been in improper contact with Russian entities. It's not known what information, if any, he may have passed on. There's some hope that he was stopped before he was able to transfer any sensitive information. The government has been relatively tight-lipped about the case, but Crown Counsel did tell reporters, without going into too much detail, it's alleged he obtained, stored, and processed sensitive information. The Crown believes with the intent to communicate that information with people he shouldn't be communicating to. He's been charged under the Security of Information Act with unauthorized communication of special operational information and with preparing for the commission of an offense by obtaining or gaining access to information or possessing any device, apparatus, or software used for concealing, surreptitiously communicating, or obtaining information. He was not charged with sharing information with a foreign government, which has led some observers to hope that nothing, in fact, reached the Russians. He also faces charges under Canada's criminal code, including breach of trust by a public officer and unauthorized use of a computer. Why would Russian intelligence be interested in the RCMP? They're Canada's National Police Service is why, and they have a counterintelligence role that's roughly analogous to that of the U.S. FBI. The Globe and Mail says that Mr. Ortiz was also running the Canadian side of an inquiry into Russian money laundering, which would also have piqued Russian interest. The other four eyes will be watching developments of the case closely, since a compromise, should one have occurred, could affect the services of Australia, New Zealand, and the United Kingdom, and the United States. The RCMP wasn't saying whether Mr. Ortiz still had a job with the Mounties, but we're betting at the very least that he's been placed on indefinite leave and probably isn't welcome back into the skiff until any of these possible misunderstandings are cleared up. Reuters reports what's long been suspected. The Australian Signals Directorate concluded in March that Chinese intelligence services were responsible for penetrating networks of Parliament and three major parties, the Liberals, the Nationals, and Labour. The government did not make the conclusion public, sources tell Reuters, because of concerns that doing so would disrupt bilateral trade negotiations. So, given that the Anonymice have begun chatting with Reuters, the Anonymice at least don't care so much about bilateral trade talks. On Friday, the U.S. Treasury Department announced sanctions against North Korean hacking organizations, units of that country's principal intelligence service, the Reconnaissance General Bureau. Three outfits were specifically singled out: the Lazarus Group, also known as Hidden Cobra, and two of its subordinate organizations, Blunerov and Andariel. Treasury holds the Lazarus Group responsible for WannaCry and the Sony hack. Blunerov has specialized in attacks on the SWIFT financial transfer system, and Dariel in carding and ATM theft. One might wonder what, at this point, is left to sanction in North Korea, but there remain many good reasons for calling out the RGB's catpaws and for naming individual actors, getting them on a range of watch lists. If all politics is local, online election influence seems to be moving in that direction as well. Medusa's account of how Russian influence operations have evolved since 2016 shows more attention to the details of advertising, more attention to domestic elections, and more listicles. The attention being paid to domestic elections is noteworthy. Apparently, embarrassment and irritation over what President Putin took to be unwelcome encouragement of dissident factions in Russian public life, such as it is, drove that 2010 effort to up Russia's espionage game in the United States. After all of this wrangling among rival intelligence services, we close with a few reminders that there are other security concerns in cyberspace. Google's Project Zero tweeted in the wee hours last night that the LastPass password manager could, under certain circumstances, leak credentials from a previously visited site. It seems to be an actual possibility, but one that requires relatively complicated user interaction to accomplish. It also seems limited to browser extensions in Chrome and Opera. LastPass's response isn't quite a physician heal thyself in the direction of Google, but anywho, Chrome users, take note. We'll see how this story develops. And speaking of Google, there are a lot of very nosy flashlight apps in the Play Store. How much does a flashlight app really need to know about you? Really? Not as much as it's asking, Avast suggests. It seems that a lot of those permissions are requested in the service of monetization on behalf of ad partners. 50 to 70 permissions seems like a lot for a flashlight to need if it's simply in the business of helping you find your keys at the tail end of a fun night. And why would the flashlight demand permission to record audio? At any rate, beware of the flashlight. It's supposed to be revealing your surroundings to you, and not vice versa.
Today's episode is sponsored by SRM, your first call for cybersecurity and investigations. Threats today are evolving faster than ever before, and since 2005, SRM has pioneered tailored security solutions for global corporations and their executives. Whether it's defending against cyber attacks with their award-winning team of ethical hackers and incident response specialists, or navigating the murky waters of compliance and ESG challenges, SRM's insight and straightforward advice will help you navigate complex risks and emerge more resilient. Their secret? A culture that nurtures the sharpest minds, giving them access to the newest technologies and the freedom to solve problems in new ways, enabling them to craft simple, effective solutions for your unique cyber challenges. Search Your First Call to discover how SRM can help your business. And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its zero-trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust Plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zero-trust-AI. And joining me once again is Justin Harvey. He's the Global Incident Response Leader at Accenture. Justin, it's always great to have you back. I wanted to touch base with you today about HTTPS and some things that are going on with that when it comes to phishing. What can you share with us?
Well, it's the magical green safe icon we've been conditioned to trust. But it's actually turning out that the trust shouldn't be implicit. And we know that the green icon means our data is safe in motion. We can all agree on that. If you have your browser and that green safe is up there, or your green bar or the black safe if you're using Chrome, that means that your browser has negotiated a TLS protocol with the web server, and intruders or attackers or adversaries that are sitting between you and that website can't see your data. Mm. But what we don't take into account is what happens when it gets to the destination. And what we're seeing is a trend in attackers that are not only using the approach to take a domain name or a company name and change the one to an L or changing an O to a zero, but they're also putting in SSL certificates. So that really gives users a little bit of more trust in that site, because we've conditioned them, hey, if it's a green safe, you're okay.
So is it the fact of the matter that SSL certificates aren't that hard to come by these days?
Yes. In fact, we're seeing a trend where SSL certificates are actually making it through the signing process, and probably instances where they shouldn't. Most notably are the domains that are just like real companies, but they've got a few characters transposed. And given how easy it is for adversaries to get their own compute power, their own web servers on the cloud, there are even virtual cloud data centers that you can pay in Bitcoin. It makes it very easy to get a mimic style domain, go register an SSL certificate, and essentially run your own business email compromise portal out of there with your misnamed sites and your SSL certificates. Now, while they are valid, they're not quite, I wouldn't really call them fake. They're really just, maybe the right term is faux here, Dave, but so they're not actually signing them in a fake sort of way. They're getting them signed so that they can be that green icon. It's just that the cert providers are not putting a stringent process on that. And when users are using their browser, either on mobile or PC or Mac or Linux, they go to these sites and then they automatically trust them because of the green icon.
Well, so, I mean, let's approach solutions to this from two directions. I mean, there's the technical side and there's the human side.
Clearly, on the technical side, the best approach is to have a little bit more of a stringent process on signing certificates, but I can only imagine the enormity of that problem out there, given the speed at which domains are being registered and certs are being signed. And on the human aspect to this, I would say that this is more of a medium to small businesses that are targeted with this style of attack. If you are part of the big businesses, they are usually policing a lot of the domains out there, trying to police a lot of the certificates. But you see with the medium and small providers, they don't have that sort of vigilance. So their users are getting duped into this sort of operation. You've also got to look at how this is being delivered to the victims, usually phishing attacks or SMS style phishing attacks, or even voice attacks. So calling up and doing a little bit of social engineering. I think that being able to train your personnel, your customers, your employees about this risk with an ongoing security awareness training program is a good step forward for it.
And I guess looking at that little lock icon and taking it with a grain of salt.
That's right. If the nature of the reason you're accessing this site is that you got a text or an email from your bank or from a social media site, they're trying to create a compelling event. They're trying to get you to say, oh my gosh, I need to stop what I'm doing now and log in. The best course of action is, no matter where it comes from, is to go and use your browser and type in the website and go to there and see if that alert exists, or simply call into wherever it is and ask them if this is their valid communication to you.
And go look up that phone number. Don't use the number that they may provide you with, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, Justin Harvey, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit criticalstart.com and request a demo today. That's criticalstart.com.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.